Hey, everybody. Welcome to In the Know with Nina. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Crowley. I'm the Director of Clinical Education and Partnerships at CECA, where we partner with healthcare professionals and clinicians to offer body composition solutions. Today, I'm so excited to be joined by Summer the Dietitian, Summer Kessel, who is a GLP-1 nutrition expert and all over social media talking about nutrition, GLP-1s, busting myths, having a loud voice and opinion, which I love. So I'm really like your authentic voice and how you're out there in the media. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me here. It's been so fun to connect with you on so many different projects, and then to be a guest on your podcast is such a treat. So thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I love a lot of the messaging that you're doing around nutrition and GLP-1s, and it's a positive and realistic sort of view. But I also am excited that you just published a book. So tell me about that.
I did. So I have a book that is on pre-order right now. It comes out in July 2025. It's called Living Your Healthiest Semaglutide Life, but it is for all GLP-1s, kind of a play on words there. Because I'm, you know, as a dietitian helping people on GLP-1s, I'm only one person. And I can teach and give classes and have a Facebook group and an Instagram platform. But really the real stuff that I love to talk about in my coaching sessions with people on these medications, it's hard to replicate that for the masses. And so when I was approached to potentially write a book, I was like, all for it. And so it's a mix of all the great kind of nutrition advice and realistic tips and tricks and approaches for just general nutrition while on the GLP-1s, but also a bit of my personal story. So I'm also a patient on a GLP-1 medication. I've struggled with obesity my whole life. So it was really fun to write about my history with obesity, how I've, you know, felt and managed it throughout my entire life, and how GLP-1s have really been such a game changer for me and so many people that I work with. So I'm really excited about it. I have a little copy up in my room. And it'll be out in people's hands really soon. So I'm excited about it.
That's awesome. And I think really the story is critical, and having someone who's both of those things. There's so many things we could talk about with bias and stigma, but actually something that, you know, we experience as dietitians is a lot of bias towards what your clinician or your dietitian should look like and should be doing. And so I love that in this space, there's a lot more credibility now of you've been there, you've done that as a patient, mm-hmm. and that informs your practice. It's not necessarily seen as, oh, you couldn't get it together and you're supposed to tell me what to do. I hate that view. I think that's so, but people have that view, you know.
Oh, I've had patients cancel appointments with me prior to me losing the weight when I was like postpartum with my daughter and just getting started as a dietitian and trying to have a private practice. And people would come to one visit and they'd be very confused as to why am I coming to this person for weight management or nutrition advice when they're in a bigger body that I would feel that. I've had people say it to my face, like, you know, and I was postpartum, but like, I was also a big girl my whole life. And it was always very frustrating. Even when I was working in the hospital setting, I very clearly can recognize a shift in the way nurses and doctors and some providers treated me as the dietitian, from when I was a bigger dietitian to when I physically appeared as a more fit, trim, healthier looking dietitian. Even if it wasn't overt, although I've had that overt kind of commentary from some folks, but even in those subtle ways that people kind of respect your opinion on nutrition more when you look the part, which is just so unfortunate. But also, like, I get it, right? Like, you want to get help from people who are walking the walk and talking the talk. And I think that's what was always so frustrating for me, is that I was doing all the things. Right. I was eating really well. I've always been an athlete. I've always been strength training. I've played sports since I was little. I just had a huge appetite and I really love food. And so even in my best intentions of trying to manage my diet, I was still overeating, and it made it very difficult to manage my weight. And even when I was successful in managing my weight with diet and exercise alone, it was torturous to maintain it. Mm-hmm. And because I was just starving, and it's really hard to want to have a healthy, happy relationship with food. You know, in our space as dietitians, there's this camp of folks who are like, you know, unconditional permission to eat and listen to your body and trust all these, you know, trust yourself. Well, if I listened to my body prior to being on GLP-1s, my intuition, it was to eat all the things all the time. And I didn't have appropriate hunger and fullness cues. And that only got worse, right? When you're trying to restrict, when you're trying to find a calorie deficit to lose weight. And so I was almost resentful to that whole camp of dietitians that were, you know, talking about these intuitive eating principles, because I just couldn't do it. And, you know, I've come to learn it was very biological for me and not my fault. Like, it was not like I was doing something wrong. You know, and it's a lot of what I talk about in the book too, is I do get kind of political, is just how we wrongly believe that individuals have a lot of control over the choices that they make with regards to food and exercise and just lifestyle in general, when truly the systematic forces, the political, educational, socioeconomic, just our food environment, is working against us. So even with all the best knowledge and all the best education that I had, and resources and skills and support and all these things, I still struggled. And so if more of those forces were against me, of course it was going to be harder to lose weight. And I just think that these medications, the GLP-1 medications, have been such a game changer for so many people like me who have done all the things all the years and nothing's worked or everything was so hard, that these medications just open that door to make it possible. Yeah. It's funny because now I do eat intuitively most of the time. Like, I do have appropriate hunger and fullness cues, and I experience satiety, which I had never known what that was, I don't think, prior to being on a GLP-1 medication. I don't know if you remember when South Park did the GLP-1 episode, and I think it was Cartman goes, "For the first time in my life, I feel full." Like, that was so real for me. Like, for the first time in my life, I would eat an appropriate size meal and be like, that was great. I'm satisfied. I don't need to eat again for 4 to 6 hours.
And it's not a moral failing to have to have help to get to that. That's fantastic that you're there and you have that. And so what if a medication is responsible for part of that, right?
I mean, I compare it. I'm on Lexapro. I'm on a SSRI, you know, with for my little anxiety and depression that I struggle with sometimes. And there's not as much stigma about that anymore, right? And it's like, if your brain chemicals need some pharmaceutical support, then great. It's a very affordable, accessible medication. And it's been very helpful for me. And so in the same way with the weight management medications, I hope that they do become more accessible and more affordable and less stigmatized and, you know, more acceptable in the space. But we're getting there. They're still very new in the minds of a lot of people, and there's a lot of education to be done with the general public and patients, but also within dietitian spaces and the healthcare community as well.
Totally. Yeah. It's an interesting place to be too, when you're considered the expert and then you're also struggling. I mean, I used to say when I worked in bariatric surgery for 18 years, and I used to say there's a 5-pound weight range that you can be to be both taken seriously as a dietitian and also understanding the struggle, right? Because and of course it's about your look. It's about what they can see on you. And that's why it's so tricky, because people judge you as the provider, you know, in how you're delivering that information. So, so I do feel like there has been a shift since that time, where now understanding the struggle, being someone who's like in the same boat, on the same sort of journey, with all the differences, of course, that individual people have, it's seen as more respected than I think it has in the past. So I think that's progress.
And I think something that's not talked about a lot is that everyone struggles with all sorts of things that aren't immediately apparent when you look at them, right? And I happen to exist in a larger body, so you would look at me and think, oh, she struggles with her weight. Maybe I wasn't. Maybe I was, I mean, there were times in my life at a heavier weight where I felt amazing,
right?
Like I was struggling with it. I just knew that this excess weight wasn't the best for my health, but like I was still confident and felt great. Met my husband at a larger weight. He, you know, loved me then and loves me now. Like, so there's a lot of judgment that happens when we look at somebody and make those kind of flash decisions, which I think is not fair. But on the flip side, I'm sure that there are registered dietitians in a healthy appearing body size, a normal weight or however you want to describe it, who are also struggling with their nutrition and their weight and their food choices and their appetite, and they just manage it in their own way,
right?
And aren't as loud and vocal and authentic about it, which is fine. Nobody's like required to share their life history as a diet, like with food, to be a good dietitian, right? Exactly. But I think that there is something there about just being truly authentic and sharing your story and your journey with nutrition and food and where you've been that makes us more relatable to patients. And when we can build that rapport with people and they can trust us, that we're not being patronizing, we're not judging them, we're not trying to change who they are as a person, we're just trying to work with them to support them to achieve their goals. And I think being authentic, that you have your own stuff going on, is helpful and can be a great way to make that connection.
I mean, especially with, you know, latest numbers are what, 70% or more of people have, you know, a BMI over 25 or consider having obesity or overweight. And so that's the absolute majority. I still find it so interesting that there's not, like, if there were any other condition that affected 70% of the population, I mean, public health would be so different, right? And it's just, yes, not to get political, there's a lot there, but there's so much that that we should be doing, because this is something that a lot of people have. And I do like the distinction between struggling with or living with. I think living in a larger body or living with obesity, I think, describes it more, because we don't want to assume struggle. You know, and we don't want to assume where someone's at or where they've been. I had this happen so much in the bariatric world, where you don't know what a person looked like before you met them. And so people would come in and be, you know, 200 or 300 pounds, but they used to be 400 or 500. And so you can't assume, okay, let's get you on. You need to have surgery. Oh no, I've had it, have been very successful with it. And this is the way that they are now. And so, yes, all of that. And I think it also lends into talking about not just weight, right? I mean, from the visual and the what do people look like, that realm is completely tricky, because it is something that you see, and you see it first, and you know, unconsciously have thoughts about that. But you also never know inside someone who is in a smaller body. I've seen now, you know, with body composition, people who have a small body and a low weight have very high levels of, you know, body fat and even visceral adipose tissue around their organs that is much more linked to chronic disease than someone who's a high weight. I'm sure you follow and love the U.S. rugby, female U.S.
Oh my
rugby.
Gosh, Alana, I'm
I obsessed. Love her.
I joke with my husband all the time that I'm going to go figure out how to be on a rugby team, because I feel like these are like my people. He's like, please, no, like, please, you're so busy. You have no time for that. And I looked for a team. I'm in the Tampa Bay area and they practice like 3 hours from me, and it's just too much of a drive. But I was like, those are my people. Like,
but she's that perfect example, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's talked about, she's about 200 pounds. I think she said something like 170 pounds is fat-free mass. And so, you know, she has a lot of muscle and she's strong and she's powerful and all of that. So I think that's a really nice example of just looking at somebody. You don't know what they feel like or what they, you know, the differentiation between their body tissue. So I do love that, for being able to sort of peek inside of someone's health outside of what they look like. And it is early in the treatment phase where we have these options for the masses, right? We had surgery, we had diet and exercise for the people on either end of that spectrum. But now for the majority of people who sort of fall between those two, there's options. And so as more of the majority kind of comes to understand that there's options for them, I'm hopeful that that can kind of tip the scale a little bit for, you know, kind of public perception and public commentary.
Yeah. And I, you know, we could get real political again with the access to these medications and the cost and the barriers there and the lack of insurance coverage. And I'm just trying to be hopeful that the space will evolve with more competition and more medications, that the prices will come down and the access will improve. And but I think as that happens and more people are starting these medications and getting more comfortable with them, you know, we're seeing more success stories than we are seeing scary stories in the news and that sort of thing. I think, though, as more people are able to access these medications, we have to be ready to support them. And I think that I get a lot of, you know me, that's why you love me. I stir the pot sometimes, you know, I'm in some Facebook groups with dietitians that are sometimes just so uninformed about this space, in the same way that we would encounter dietitians who are uninformed about bariatric surgery. If that's not your niche and you don't understand it, I'm seeing the same thing in the GLP-1 space with nutrition. And it's so frustrating because my takeaway about nutrition on a GLP-1 is that finally the good basic dietary guidelines, the plate method that we all know how to teach actually works. Is really most of the time now the thing that a patient on these medications, it's like, it's these medications somehow, and it's, I guess, how they work in the brain. And you don't understand unless you're a person on these medicines. It's really hard to explain, but everybody who's on these medicines will be like, yep, this is correct. Something about these medicines removes those barriers to change, those like hiccups in motivation that we would encounter as dietitians. We're sitting here counseling and coaching, and there's all these walls that we run into with, we can educate our hearts out and they're just not ready, or they're just can't get past a lot of concerns and issues and holdups, right? They're in this like pre-contemplation kind of place where they're not ready to make a change. There's something about starting these medications that removes those barriers to change, and people are ready to do the good nutrition stuff.
That they may have always known. They may have already
known. They've always known. And that's what I say a lot too, is like, sometimes clients will come to me, patients will come to me to work on nutrition, and they're brilliant with nutrition. They've been to dietitians before. They've maybe even had bariatric surgery and done the 6 months of nutrition counseling. They've read every nutrition book. They've tried every diet. They follow the nutrition influencers. They're discerning where they're like, is that science-based? Is that not science-based? I have some of these people who come to me and I'm like, you're doing amazing. And like, okay, let's tweak the fiber a little bit. Let's tweak the protein a little bit. But like, yeah, the balanced meals, stop when you're full, make sure you're eating enough, stay hydrated. Everybody needs a fruit or vegetable. Like, it's really the basics become the intervention and actually work, because the medications help you stop overeating.
Yeah.
And if I say this a lot, now on a GLP-1 medication, I am able to eat according to my best intentions more often than not.
Perfectly said.
If I want a cookie, one cookie hits the spot.
Mm.
And before, it used to take, one cookie would turn into 20 cookies. Mm. One cookie would be the rest of the cookies would be calling to me from the kitchen, and they couldn't be in the house. And I had problem foods and I would overeat certain things. And when you're a person struggling with weight loss and you're trying to maintain a calorie deficit, and you're hungry all the time, because that's what happens when you're in a calorie deficit, you have more cravings, you have more food noise, you have more desire to seek these highly palatable foods. All that goes quiet on these medicines, especially in the first year. And so adhering to the nutrition plan is easy. And the coworker shows up with donuts and you're like, eh, I don't want them. You know, I'd go to the cafeteria. When I first started, I was still working in the hospital. And that cafeteria man, the tater tots, the cookies, the pizza, they would call to me. And I remember when I first started these medications, walking into the cafeteria and looking at the tater tots and being like, ew, gross. I was like, wait, who am I? Like, what do you mean? Gross tater tot. You know, now 2.5 years on these medications, it's not as strong. It's not as apparent. I'm in maintenance. I'm a little hungrier. I'm much more active, intentionally strength training way harder than I was before. I'm still a hungry gal, but I'm still able to say, like, my husband bought these chocolate cluster caramel things in the pantry. I've had one, but I'm not thinking about them all day, every day, like I would have before. Yeah. And so it's just made my mindset around eating easier, and therefore following good habits is easier. And what's great about these medications is, you know, it's kind of that like paradox of like, the more results you see, the more motivated you are to keep doing it. And like, oh gosh, it is really working. And so because these medications are actually so effective, you don't run into that person who can like, they can do anything for 8 weeks, but then there's that plateau period and they fall off, like with traditional weight loss and exercise programs. So you see less people falling off. Mm-hmm. You see more consistency, more perseverance, more just commitment to the journey, because the weight loss is a little more consistent, a little more, they get that positive feedback. And maybe for the first time in their life, they're losing weight that they could never, you know, maybe they always could lose from 250 to 200 and then they'd hit 200 and feel stuck. And now they just, you know, flow on through it. Mm-hmm. And it's really fun space to work in as a dietitian, honestly, because I'm able to get down to the nitty gritty of the nutrition stuff. That's like fun to think about, like, oh, let's get creative about how we can get more fiber. Let's get creative about how we can get a little bit more protein, or let's brainstorm some new dinner ideas, 'cause you're getting burned out and your kids are picky. Like, we can actually do that fun food stuff because we're not having to work through all the big, heavy, hard motivation stuff.
That's exactly it. It's like you've removed the barrier, the blinders, or the, you know, something mm-hmm. that made that harder. And I always used to say that about surgery for folks. It was like, it's a break from mm-hmm. from the mind part of not being able to do the things you want to do. And so mm-hmm. I think, you know, the way you said it actually is beautiful, because it's really putting the essence of that to maybe help someone understand if they're not experiencing that, which is the challenge, right? To understand that you don't know where someone's at on their nutrition journey and their knowledge journey, but there's got to be some behavior that we can all relate to in, hey, I wish I could do that, but it's hard for me and I struggle and I'm not there. Like, those two separate things. I want to do this and it's hard to do this. And so I think, you know, it bridges
that gap.
Yeah. Finding what that is for somebody can help them understand. I always liked using examples outside of food and nutrition, like in your marriage or, you know, at work. And then people could say, oh yeah, oh, that makes sense. You know, if you can take it out of that, you know, into highly personal experience for that person. Oh yeah, I can understand that from that perspective. Like, getting someone to change a behavior is tough, but if you're removing some of the biology of that, then you can do the intentional stuff. And I mm-hmm. think that's important, because a lot of times you don't need to start from scratch teaching someone all the nutrition things, mm-hmm. right? You just have to find out what they know, where they're at, what, you know, how you can yeah. help. I love how you said, like, get creative and get, you know, I always thought of it like an experiment or a challenge. Like, you know how to do this stuff. What do you like? What do you want to eat? It's not mm-hmm. about me giving you a list or telling you what to eat. There's not anything super, you know, deep or different about eating with GLP-1 medication or surgery or anything else.
It's really just not. It's like the good basic principles still apply. You know, and I think where people get confused and frustrated is that the internet space or the information space where we get our nutrition education is so full of misinformation and anti-science and schemes and tricks and, you know, and the thing is that those schemes work because you're significantly eliminating a food group, which then slashes your calories, which gives you something to follow. and you're attentive to your nutrition and you're on a plan and you can follow it, you know, you follow the meal plan or you follow the plan or you count the calories or whatever your scheme is, you can do that for how long?
For a period of time.
Until it's frustrating or it gets old or it feels restrictive and unsustainable. And that is, and people think, well, there's something wrong with me. Why can't I stick to this? It's like, no, you're just hungry. You're just human. You're just a hungry person. And it's that biology bit with the food noise that I have such a hard time explaining food noise to people. I wrote a whole chapter about it in my book, all the biology, all the like practical ways that it actually shows up in people's lives. But it's also one of those things, like, unless you have it, you maybe don't understand it. There's so many hit pieces, right? Some woman went viral where she was like, it's not food noise. It's just hunger and you're not eating enough. And I'm like, well, then why am I 300 pounds? You know, that's not where it's too many calories. If it's just hunger, hunger should be satisfied at like a baseline level and not take me over and not put me under, right? I should maintain if I'm eating to normal hunger and fullness levels. There's something going on that is beyond hunger. And it's even beyond cravings, because cravings are normal. It's a very normal human thing to see fresh baked cookies. They smell amazing. They remind you of your grandma and you want to eat one. Beautiful. But there's something more there where it feels out of control. It feels anxiety producing. It feels fraught with difficulty to make that choice whether or not I could or should or eat that cookie. Yeah. People without food noise don't overthink it like that. Mm-hmm. They just go, oh yeah, I love cookies. I haven't had one in a while. Thank you so much. People with food noise do this like mental gymnastics, right? Or people on a weight loss journey are like, well, I guess if I have this cookie now, then I can maybe not eat that rice I was planning to eat with dinner, or maybe I can get a few extra steps. They try to start compensating. It's like this mental game. The GLP-1s quiet all of that. And a cookie's just a cookie. And it's hilarious to me now, at this stage in my career, having been so anti-intuitive eating in the beginning, to now seeing where some of these intuitive eating principles, the mindfulness, the like listening to your body, the awareness of the environment, and like being kind to yourself, and like some of these really beautiful, lovely things about intuitive eating actually now are really applicable to this population on GLP-1 medications. And I wish I could get these really intuitive eating dietitians to join my club over here, because we need you. Like, you have beautiful, wonderful skills around eating and meal planning and nutrition and fueling your body and all this great knowledge. And it's funny because I see, and I know I'm grouping, and I know this will be offensive to some groups of people, because I know they're wonderful intuitive eating aligned dietitians who are supporting people on GLP-1s in a wonderful way. But the majority that I see online and in these Facebook groups are just very like anti-GLP-1. Right. And I'm like, they enable your client to do the stuff you want them to do.
Yes.
And it's a great combination. So I'm just hopeful that the space will evolve. That's why I'm so loud and annoying about it online. But I think patients appreciate feeling advocated for and knowing that, you know, they have somebody in their corner that can really help them.
What's funny about the way you're talking about that is it's always been a struggle. I've always had a lot of back and forth about intuitive eating, health at every size, you know, how do these align? And I remember 15 years ago, talking about in bariatric patients, could we use these principles? And I very much felt like they aligned very nicely, because what everybody thinks a dietitian is there to do, right? Oh, tell me what to eat, count calories, count whatever. In the surgical world, I'm like, no, we don't do that. We help people figure out what they like and want. And the surgery, or here, the medication, takes care of the how much. So you don't have to do the calorie counting necessarily. You know, everybody's got a different plan, but you don't have to pay as careful attention to the amount. You're paying attention to the type and the quality, which again are these foundational nutritional principles that maybe people who have not had a struggle with their weight can just do naturally. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like you're returning the biology of someone to that of a more natural state of a person who could naturally eat intuitively, have a bite of this, not demonize food, you know, and maybe some of that all or nothing, never have, that's not on my list. Maybe some of that can go away. And I think mm-hmm. that's very adaptive and sustainable for the long term if you're able to not exclude entire groups of food and be able mm-hmm. to have a healthier relationship with food. So it's almost like a mediating variable to getting a healthier relationship with food. And again, who cares if it's, who cares whatever the agent is that helps you get that? The end game is you're there, you can feel healthier, you can do all the functional things that
you can live your best life. You can live the life you want to live. Like, that's the end goal, right? If the end goal is not a goal weight, the end goal is not necessarily perfect labs. The end goal is not to achieve a goal weight or follow a plan. The goal here is to support this person in being able to focus on something else.
Yes.
Like, these medications help people. I've heard this said before, and I think I've said it before too. Like, when I started these medications, like, suddenly my career blossomed. Suddenly my relationships blossomed. Suddenly I felt like a better mom, because instead of spending all this time in my head stressed about food, I could look at the world around me and enjoy it. Like, it was profound. I was asked on a podcast once, if the world was coming to an end, would I keep taking my GLP-1 medication, or would I say F it and just start eating all the things that I've not been eating? Or not that I can't eat.
I heard you on this one.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm pretty sure I'd keep taking my medication because I love it and it's great. And the person thought I was insane. And all of my patients and all of my followers were like, no, yeah, me too. I'd still take it too. And I think that that's an interesting story that doesn't get told a lot. I mean, I have patients who say, even if I never lost a pound, I would be happy to be on this medication because of XYZ that it does for me. I mean, I have people with IBS who no longer have IBS symptoms. I have people with chronic pain who no longer have those chronic pain symptoms because of the inflammation decrease. I have people who had really difficult to control diabetes now have a normal A1C for the first time in 20 years. They may not have lost a whole lot of weight. They don't look particularly different, but these medications have drastically improved those markers. Yeah. So I think that when we talk about these medications as like weight management medications, and I know I use that term interchangeably, or weight loss medications, I hate that. They're anti-obesity medications, truly. Because obesity is a chronic disease and we are treating it. And obesity, we know, relates to so many downstream secondary diseases, especially with time, right? And so that's one of my big hangups with like the Health at Every Size movement. I'm politically aligned with every single thing that movement talks about, all of it, except that excess adipose tissue can be harmful. Mm-hmm. I think the science is clear that excess adipose tissue on a body for a prolonged period of time causes metabolic dysfunction and downstream health outcomes. I mean, I worked in a hospital for 8 years and it was a profound difference in the care and the end of life kind of scenario that I would see with patients who were, you know, normal body size and mobile and had good muscle, and people who were had a lot of obesity, a lot of excess weight, and were not very mobile. Just they could both have come in with a car accident, and just their trajectory is just totally different. And so sometimes we have to remember that we're not just using these medications to help somebody look a certain way or meet a certain health standard. One of my favorite questions to ask in a session with a patient is like, what kind of old person do you want to be? You know, I see myself, I'm in Florida. This is my life goal. I talk to everybody about it. I see myself very wrinkly skinned, tan, with all my tattoos and everything, in a bikini, as an old lady with white hair walking down the beach every single morning. I want to be that person that I see when I go to the beach. I want to be her. I want to live on the water and I want to be able to get up every day and walk the beach, right? And be that fit, older looking lady and live that life.
I love that.
That's what I see. And so I ask people all the time, like, what kind of older person do you want to be? Do you want to be, have a hard time with mobility and be dependent on other people? Or do you want to be very active and independent? And that's where really I can help motivate people, not just to do the nutrition bit, but I'd love to talk about strength training and fitness and mobility. Yes. Because I tell people all the time, I'd rather you have more fat, like not lose a ton of weight and have great muscle, than lose all this weight just for the sake of a number on the scale and lose a whole bunch of muscle. So I talk about that a lot with people, the muscle preservation, the muscle growth. Sometimes I'm kind of jealous because a lot of my patients have never strength trained before, right? And they're learning a lot of muscle and they get all these newbie gains that I'm like so jealous of because I haven't seen those for like 20 years, right? But it's really cool to get people moving in that way where they feel strong,
yeah,
and can live their life and do the things they want to do. And it's always somebody goes to Disney, you know, and go to Disney, they can walk the whole park without having to sit on the bench every hour and they feel great.
Those functional milestones are big.
Amazing. Yeah. And it's like, none of that really matters with the numbers on the scale. It's the habits and the lifestyle and the abilities that we gain. And I think too, just being able to break up with that mental stress of the food noise, again, allows people to live their lives and to fuel it appropriately without it being such a struggle.
Mm-hmm. And the thing you said too that I love is I've been seeing a lot more like, okay, we're getting away from weight. Great. The number on the scale, all of that. And then we kind of move to adiposity and talking about body fat, but I'm with you. I think the next era is really thinking more about where's the muscle? How do we get it? How do we get more of it? How do we make the muscle that we have, you know, stronger, function better, you know, all of those other components, because mm-hmm. that is what's related to all of that. I love that old person, you know, kind of dreaming of what that looks like and putting a, what does that person do every day? And how do we get there and build those habits now? I think that's a really mm-hmm. solid way to talk about it in a way that's not contributing to more anxiety. It's not contributing to more disordered thinking or eating, you know, all of that. I think it really sort of wraps mm-hmm. that up in a nice way and reminds people that those are really the goals.
Yeah. I want people to be happy and healthy and be able to do other things. Like, I'm thrilled when people want to come meet with me and talk about nutrition. Like, it's great. Let's spend this time. Let's really think about it. Let's plan through. Let's focus on our nutrition. But I don't want you to have to do that all day, every day. That's what you're coming to me for. Let's figure it out. Let's plan a few things. Let's set some intentions. Let's set some goals. See how we do. Problem solve around them. We can follow up later. You know, no pressure to be perfect. That's a big thing that I'm really want people to understand about nutrition is like there's diminishing returns the closer and closer and closer we get to this like perfect, if there even is one, right? Like there's a big jump in improvement when we reduce sugars, when we reduce like liquid sugars, especially like sodas and sweet teas and juices, like if we reduce those, that's a big jump in health, right? If we reduce fried foods, that's a big jump in health. We eat more vegetables, big jump, right? But then we're over here in the nitty gritty and it's like, do they need to be organic or natural or cooked mm-hmm. a specific way? I had somebody ask me the other day about like, should I really be cooking, freezing, and then reheating my rice? And I'm like, I mean, well, are you eating any vegetables? Right? Like, do we need to worry about resistant starches in the little details of like right now what's popular, like stressing about seed oils? Mm. Really, do we have to worry about that? Or can we just focus on like, are we eating fruits and vegetables? Are we getting enough fiber? Are we eating protein with every meal? Are we drinking our water? Are we getting steps? Like, let's focus on the stuff that like actually impacts our health.
Yeah.
And then maybe if we get all these things in line and we want to nitpick little details of nutrition down the road, we can be more specific.
Yeah.
But for the majority of people, I work with, it's the basics. It's the low-hanging fruit. It's like, you know, you live in the Northeast and it's wintertime and fruit's not super accessible. How do we get some fruit into your diet? Like, it's those kinds of things that matter more than, I think, all those little details that are so viral. And so, like, they get clicks and they get people excited and they're in the news and they're, you know, on TikTok, people are talking about these little details of nutrition. They really don't matter that much. And it's, people look at me like, as a dietitian, well, you should care about these things. I do. I'm aware of them. But again, the majority of people need to know that, like,
big stuff.
A frozen toaster waffle with breakfast is better than no breakfast. Like, people need to know that, like, right. You know, if you want to eat, you know, packaged foods, like, there's so many that are so awesome. Like, not everything has to be a whole food.
Right.
Like, I mean, I include almost all of my meals.
I'm putting individuals out there to discuss their nuanced eating in a public eye. So, of course, there's never going to be one way to do it. And that's why, maybe that's why it still exists, because there's never going to be, you know, a solution to sort of perfect eating. And I love the diminishing returns analogy or way of thinking mm-hmm. about it. It's interesting. It makes me think of some research about happiness and about financial, like how much you make and what's related to happiness. And I think the number's like 80,000, where getting up to that for an individual, I think an individual or family, I don't know, but whatever, getting up to that point, it's with each incremental, you know, amount you get closer to that, you see gains in happiness. But once you pass that 80, it tons more doesn't make you happier. And so maybe that's, you know, kind of the way to think about nutrition, is work up to get to that 80. But once you're there, like, think about other things.
Yeah. I
think it's a really good way to put it.
And when we get there, when we work our way up to reasonable, realistic, mostly health promoting, we want to stay there. So many people ebb and flow between all in and all off. And I'd rather us just spend more time kind of good enough.
Yeah.
For and a long period of time.
And do the other things in your life that
you can
enjoy. I think that's, yeah. Well, with that sentiment, I think I could definitely stay talking to you all day, but I'm sure you have some patients to see.
I do.
And yeah, so I'd love to continue in real life chatting about this soon at one of our conferences. But for folks who you know, want more Summer the Dietitian, how do they stay in touch?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, Summer the Dietitian. Technically, I'm on TikTok, but we don't get along very well. So Instagram, Summer the Dietitian, is really the best place to find me. Recently, have in the past few months, we're working on launching and opening. We have opened our new telemedicine clinic, GLP-1 medications and comprehensive care, dietitian support, strength training program, and direct physician access. Our founder and funder is Dr. Spencer Nadalski, who I think a lot of people who follow you probably are familiar with Dr. Spencer. And we're doing some really cool things. We have an amazing, supportive Facebook community of patients on Facebook that's free if anybody wants to come join. And then you can join Vineyard. We're working our way towards all 50 states. We're not quite there yet, but joinvineyard.com to work with me or one of our dietitians and providers for GLP-1 access, medication access, prescription. We don't do compounds. We send your prescription to your pharmacy of choice. But we are getting people access to the new vials from Eli Lilly, the Zepbound vials, which are much more affordable now than Zepbound used to be.
Right.
And we also are offering care to folks who maybe don't want to be on a GLP-1 medication, but they want that kind of comprehensive weight management support. So we're trying to be as inclusive as we can be. It's a virtual program, dietitians, lots of content, Facebook groups, support groups, group events. And the real special part is direct access to your doctor, which a lot of places just don't do anymore. You get like a care coordinator, an AI bot, and it takes 5 days for your doctor to get back to you. And we're trying to be different. We're trying to truly care about the patient and improve that experience. So We'd love for people to join us, joinvineyard.com. If you have any questions, Summer the Dietitian on Instagram. And then you can buy my book anywhere you buy your books. It's on Amazon already. Living Your Healthiest Semaglutide Life. If you just look up my name, I pop right up. It's really fun.
And you guys have Grant Tinsley on board to make sure that body composition is in the equation and being talked about.
Ew.
Comprehensive care. I love that.
Really great opportunity for anyone who's going to be brand new to GLP-1. So they've never taken a GLP-1 medication before. We're enrolling folks in a study for body composition analysis throughout their journey on the GLP-1s, because we have strong opinions that the risk for muscle loss on these medications perhaps is not as profound as the general mainstream media may make it sound. It's definitely there, but we want to actually get some data around that and see if, you know, strength training and protein intake and, good support while on a medication can mitigate that risk. And so we get people DEXA scans on regular intervals. I know how you feel about DEXA scans. It's okay. It's what's accessible to the program. So we're excited about what's to come. We're going to start getting loud on socials, and I've got some conferences booked. So we'll be out there talking about this topic more. And I just appreciate you having me on. And then before we go, because I'm going to have you as a guest, I'm launching a new podcast. Called Dietitians Who Lift. It's filming tomorrow, my very first episode.
Okay.
So stay tuned for that. And I would love for you to come and me ask you a whole bunch of questions about body composition and bariatrics and nutrition. So I'm really excited about that.
I'm in. I love it. I guess I'm going to start lifting.
We're going to get you lifting. Don't worry.
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. And we'll be sure to make sure everybody gets connected with you and your resources, and we continue this conversation. Thanks, Summer.
Thank you.